Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hotspots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello and welcome to Hotspots. Today we'll be discussing plastics, the implications and solution to the proliferation of plastics all around us. Plastics are overwhelming our ecosystems. They are ubiquitous, they are everywhere in our lives, and they are breaking down into very small particles, microplastics, which are being found throughout the food chain and in our bodies. There's a lot of effort around the world to deal with the plastics crisis, and today we'll look at some of those efforts in this podcast. My guest is Pamela Miller, who founded Alaska Community Action on Toxics in 1997 and serves as executive director. She brings more than 35 years of research, education, and advocacy experience to her work for environmental and reproductive justice, health, and human rights issues. And in addition to being executive director for Alaska Community Action on Toxics, Pamela was elected in 2016 as co-chair of the International Pollutants Elimination Network, which is a network of more than 600 environmental and health justice organizations working in more than 124 countries. She serves as a principal investigator for community-based participatory research projects funded by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Pam is very familiar with the plastics crisis and its implications for our health, as well as the future well-being of the planet. So thank you so much, Pam, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. Good to talk with you, Kay.
Good to see you. Tell me about some of the work that you have done and are doing to address plastic pollution.
Sure. Well, we're really working from the local to international level because the scope of this problem is, as you said, immense. And it's something that really crosses political boundaries and is a global health crisis. So locally, we're doing work as part of Plastics Free 907 to help encourage businesses and people to reduce the plastics that we use every day. At the state level, we're also working to get legislation passed. Several bills have been introduced in our state legislature. One is House Bill 25, sponsored by Representative Andy Josephson, that would ban the use of polystyrene food packaging, one of the most damaging forms of plastic. It's carcinogenic and it's very ubiquitous in our environment. So we think that that's a good step forward to eliminate that unnecessary use of plastic. We're also working to introduce bills that would address microplastics, that would ban the intentional use of microplastics in many of the products that we have. And then internationally, we're also working on the International Treaty on Plastics, which would be a global agreement of 180 or more nations that would agree on certain principles and commitments to phase out the use of plastics and center human health and the environment in that treaty.
Why are plastics such an urgent problem that we need to be paying attention to? What is it about their use and presence in the environment that makes them problematic?
Well, first of all, global plastics production has increased really exponentially since the 1950s. reaching about 400 million metric tons in 2022. So much of this plastic ends up as waste in our environment, ends up in the oceans, and then breaks down to form small, tiny particles called microplastics, which are less than 5 millimeters. And these are getting into just about every species of fish and wildlife. They're in our own bodies. They're present in brain tissue. They cross the blood-brain barrier. They're in placenta, so they are being carried into our children through the placenta and then through breast milk. They affect virtually every organ system in our body. And it's not just the physical harm caused by microplastics in our bodies, but these microplastics can convey toxic chemicals. There are over 16,000 chemicals that are used in the production of plastics, and many of these are in microplastics, which then, again, get carried into our bodies, and these chemicals can then be transmitted into our bodies as well. And these are harmful chemicals like phthalates that can disrupt and cause infertility. Certain others are neurodevelopmental toxicants, and certain other of these chemicals are cancer-causing. And I guess that is one of my big concerns, is that it's not just the plastics or the microplastics themselves, it's the chemicals in microplastics. And the microplastics act like tiny little Trojan horses carrying these chemicals into our bodies.
In science, scientific studies have been done documenting the harms that these are causing?
Yes. This is relatively new science, but there is definitely harm from microplastics, including inflammation, harm to cardiometabolic function. And again, these chemicals in plastics are known neurotoxicants, carcinogens, and can cause a range of adverse human health effects.
Why is plastics production and its associated pollution a climate issue? How are plastics affecting the climate?
Well, the production of plastic causes a lot of it. The production of plastics, and again, plastics originate from fossil fuels. So the extraction of fossil fuels through the disposal of these plastics, this whole cycle of production of plastics, use and disposal, is a huge contributor to climate warming. Plastics manufacturing alone produces close to 2 billion tons of greenhouse gases. So thinking about the climate contribution of plastics, the fossil fuel companies, which are also chemicals and plastics manufacturers, are really banking on chemicals and plastics as a way to use their products, since the demand for direct combustion of fuel from fossil fuels is declining. But there's really, in the companies project, really an exponential increase in the use of these products for really to replace and to create a need for the continuing extraction of fossil fuels.
So the oil companies are shifting their focus from being major producer, well, they are major producers, but from the fuel industry to your plastics industry, which they anticipate, no matter how fuel goes, we're going to continue to need plastics.
Yes. And so petrochemicals and plastics have really become the largest driver of energy consumption and thus contributing heavily to climate change. And the fossil fuel industry is really investing significantly in oil and gas as feedstock for petrochemicals and plastic as demand for the direct combustion declines with the transition to renewable energy.
So you mentioned the international treaty that's in the process of being negotiated. I understand it hit some snags this past fall and was not completed. What's the outlook for getting that accomplished?
we're ever optimistic, and we have been involved in the five, now six, negotiating sessions for the plastics treaty. I think the snag has come because of the influence, unfortunately, of the fossil fuels and chemical industry, because they are influencing, especially the handful of the major fossil fuel production nations, to try to negotiate the weakest possible treaty. But I would say I'm optimistic because there are really hundreds and hundreds of non-governmental organizations like our own that are working for a strong, enforceable, legally binding treaty. And we are, I think, having an influence on those nations that also want to have a strong treaty. And those are the nations that are most affected by plastics as well as climate change. The small island states, countries in Central and South America that have been subject to the export of massive quantities of plastic waste. There's a lot of, I think, determination among these nations for an ambitious treaty. So we'll have another negotiating session. Right now, currently, the next session will involve electing a new chair, and then there will be another full negotiating session probably in the summer of this year.
Is the United States still participating, or has Trump withdrawn from this forum like he has from many other forums that the United Nations has, such as the climate forums?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see. The U.S. is there, and they've played what I would say a very negative and destructive role in the climate, in the plastics treaty negotiations. It's not been constructive. And, you know, I think they're acting in the best interest of the fossil fuel industry rather than the health of our environment and human health.
Would the treaty apply to countries and require them to be responsible for how much plastic is produced in their country, or would it apply to the industry? How does that work? Can a treaty like that force countries to do something to regulate industry?
Yes, it can. And I think one of the things we're calling for is a drastic reduction in the production of plastics to eliminate unnecessary plastics such as single-use plastics, which make up a huge percentage of the plastics that end up in our environment and ultimately in our bodies, and to set legally binding measures to regulate chemicals and plastics as well.
So people are exposed to the request frequently that we should be recycling these plastics. Does recycling really work, or do they mostly just still end up in landfills, reused plastic, or used once plastic, you know, drink bottles and cutlery and things like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, we all want to do the right thing, and recycling sounds like a good solution, but really a very, very small percentage, less than 10%, of plastics are recycled. And that's largely because of the unsustainability and the lack of circularity for these plastics, because they're toxic because of the thousands and thousands of chemicals that are used. So, for instance, they can't be properly recycled if this is a toxic material. So, for instance, if we wanted to recycle electronic plastics, these are loaded with chemicals such as flame retardants and heavy metals. And if these are recycled, for example, into household products, we're just gonna unfortunately expose our children and ourselves to greater harm because of the toxic recycling of plastics.
So what are local communities doing? And you mentioned a couple of things the state of Alaska is considering in the legislature, but are these local initiatives such as banning plastic bags, plastic straws, are those effective? Are those actions that you think make sense and are helpful?
Well, I think we need to take whatever measures we can, because it's going to take all of us, from our own households to local levels to international levels, to address this problem. So, for instance, the community of Bethel just passed a ban on polystyrene food packaging and plastic bags. Many other communities are addressing single-use plastics. We need to take urgent measures and reduce, especially the unnecessary uses of plastics. There are many things that we can do in our own homes to reduce plastics. So again, eliminating our use of single-use plastics and avoiding the most hazardous or the worst plastics, such as PVC, polystyrene, polycarbonate. These are very toxic plastics. And there are many materials that can be used in their place, such as glass and stainless steel and cast iron, to cook food. And we really must never microwave in plastics, because the heat from the microwaving will release toxic chemicals into the food or beverage. And there's just, you know, the opportunity to use reusable containers, stainless steel water bottles, for example, buy in bulk, bring cloth bags to the grocery store. So there are so many things that we can do in our own homes, but we also have to remember that this is not something we can shop our way out of. That's why it's really necessary to enact policies at the local to international levels to address this problem, because it is ubiquitous and it's going to take all of us to address the problem.
Do you think the problem of plastic pollution and the health effects and the effects on wildlife, which get all tangled up in it in the ocean, all of the cumulative effects that are occurring, are well understood? I mean, is the public focusing on this problem?
You know, I think there's been a lot of awareness about the visible effects of plastics, for example, in the oceans and wildlife getting entangled in plastics in the ocean. I think we're just developing an awareness about the extent of the problem. But there's been a lot of coverage, I think, in the media, with new scientific papers coming out showing the presence of microplastics in our brain, in our women that are pregnant and conveying these plastics through their placenta, and all of the health harms associated not only with the plastics, again, with the plastics themselves, but also the chemicals in these plastics that are being ingested into our bodies.
So in terms of your advice to individuals, what would it be, besides things you've already mentioned, just avoid plastics if you can and choose alternatives?
Yeah, I think safe alternatives, whatever we can do on an individual or family level is really important, but we have to act collectively to get policies in place, whether that's a local ordinance in your community or whether that's a piece of state legislation that bans certain types of plastics and single-use plastics in particular, or, you know, working at the international level. These plastics, microplastics, don't respect political boundaries, much as chemicals do not respect political boundaries. And the North and the Arctic are major hemispheric sinks for both microplastics and chemicals that travel on wind and ocean currents. So this is something really that requires multi-level effort and collective effort to eliminate this problem.
Well, I want to thank you, Pam, for all the work that you are doing in this area, as well as many other areas related to protecting our environment. And this has been a look at yet another of the serious environmental threats that's just kind of been pushed out of the public dialogue lately, at least in the United States, as Trump has turned against science and environmental protection and has continued to flood the zone with authoritarian threats and actions and all kinds of craziness. Keep resisting, persisting, and stay strong. That's all for now. We'll see you next time on Hotspots.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hot Spots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from UnitedAmericaNetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire on United America Network.